This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. If someone you know has 5 scotches at a family party, does that mean he's an addict? What if she goes out of the house and comes back glassy-eyed? Sometimes addiction is easy to spot, like when you see someone you know and love nodding out on a street. If this happens in your family, what do you do? When and how should you step in? Dr. Henry Gregory directs the Rafiki Consortium. It gives public and private agencies training on dealing with mental health issues. And a woman we'll call Charlotte has a brother who went through an intervention led by Dr. Gregory. We've also got with us Michael Middleton, a recovering heroin addict. I'm really glad all of you are here to share your stories. Thank you.
Welcome.
Hello, Farai.
Hi.
Well, I'm going to start with you, Dr. Gregory. You have been working in family therapy for over 30 years. So how would you describe your approach to families, specifically when you deal with substance abuse counseling?
Well, I think it's very important to get the family involved. There's definitely evidence that says that family intervention is more successful than individual intervention. So it's all about relationships in the Black community. And the more you can activate those relationships through a loving, respectful intervention, the better chance you have of getting that person in treatment, retaining them in treatment, and even minimizing relapse.
So what does a loving, respectful intervention mean? I mean, how do you... You're really talking about taking one group of people's worldview, a family that says you should act in this certain way, hopefully a healthy way, and someone else's worldview, which says that I have to do this substance or action every day. How do you make that a respectful interaction?
Well, you talk about how the addiction or the usage affects you, what your thoughts and feelings are. See, abuse only thrives when there's a collusion of silence. At some level, the abuser begins to take up all the emotional space in the family, and then the family is silenced verbally and emotionally. For the intervention, you just activate those voices so people begin to talk about how these things affect them, watching the addict go through what he goes through, how it feels to miss that person in an honest a reciprocal relationship, and giving that feedback very frequently gets the addict's attention.
All right, Charlotte, I'm glad you're talking with us. Now, why did your family approach Dr. Gregory for help with your brother?
My brother, who came out of Vietnam, went and came out of Vietnam, had long years of drinking, heavy drinking, and then also drug abuse. And because he was living in the house with me and my mother, who was quite elderly, we went through a lot. The siphoning off of money, some bad attitudes, some negative words, et cetera, et cetera. And then my mother not being able to see what was happening, and then my being able to see it, telling her about it, but her not really believing me, I said, Maria, Charlotte, you're going to have to go and get somebody to help you with this. And so I knew Dr. Gregory, and we talked, and his first concern is that we have got to get your mother on board. We have got to talk to your mother and see if she is willing to help us or let us do what we need to do to intervene. So she agreed, went out to lunch, talked, and they presented to her that we're going to have to literally get him out of the house. And that's what we had to do. I didn't know what else to do, so that's why I turned to Dr. Gregory, and I knew his strategy would be something that was peaceful and not, you know, violent or totally traumatic. So that's the route we went.
Dr. Gregory, back to you. You've been involved in dozens of interventions. How did this one play out?
Well, it was interesting. What we agreed is that Charlotte and her mother would not be home when it happened. So we scheduled it, and one morning, about eight folks just converged on the house where her brother was sleeping. His best friend knocked on the door, and when he opened the door, we all came in. He looked around. He looked very surprised, and we went in the room and sat down and started talking. And he had a very interesting reply to our intervention. He said, "What took you so long?" He's a kind of a, how should I say it, unique kind of guy, kind of sarcastic. But I think that captured it. At some level, he wanted somebody to stop him, and he couldn't do it on his own. And he trusted the people who were involved. Although they were not family members in the Black community, family is extended family. It includes biological and psychological members. And these were people who were very connected to him. And he'd sit down and let them give him feedback and tell them what their concerns were, and basically submitted to the process. Now, I'll say that day he took a shower, got his clothes on. We took him directly to a treatment facility where he stayed for, I forget, a couple months. And since that time, he continued in treatment and has basically emancipated from the family. Even though he was an adult several times over biologically, he's basically emancipated. He's on his own and doing well at this point.
Well, Michael, don't think I've forgotten about you, but I want to ask Charlotte one more question first. Do you think this was a success, and why or why not?
I think it was a success for my brother in that it might have been the first time he actually turned around and stepped off of the drugs and the alcohol. I am hoping he is still off of the drugs and the alcohol. He's not in the same state now. It was extremely difficult for my mother. Her health went downhill from there. She has since passed. But yes, successful. I think it's the best way and probably the only way we could have done it. There is no way that she and I could have done it. There's no way that we could have intervened. We really had to have someone close to us to come in and do it. So yes, it was successful.
I just want to let people who've tuned in midway know we're continuing our series on addiction. We're talking about family intervention. Of course, this is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We were just hearing from Charlotte, who had an intervention with her brother. And the person she got to do that intervention was Dr. Henry Gregory, director of the Rafiki Consortium. We're also talking to Michael Middleton, a recovering heroin addict. And Michael, let me talk to you.
Yeah.
Who were you before your addiction, and how did addiction creep up on you?
Well, I practiced law for 25 years, and I was happily married, had two children, a boy and a girl, and pretty active in my community. As a result of, I guess, of domestic problems, I took to drugs. Recreational and to fill up space for the void. But then afterwards, the drugs took over. And I went on a 15-year run of going from cocaine, freebasing, to crack, and then finally to heroin. Obviously, I lost my right to practice, was suspended, so I couldn't practice law anymore. And the whole grip of addiction took over. I was out there for 15 years.
When you say out there, do you mean that you were jobless? And what was your day-to-day life like once you really were no longer able to practice law and still in the throes of your addiction?
Well, the drug became the most important aspect of my life, and I did any and everything to get drugs. And obviously, being caught up in addiction, I could not do the nature of work, which I think intellectually I was capable of doing. And so I sought employment from any and everything. I washed dishes. I cut grass at times. When it snowed, I shoveled snow. I worked as a hustler with home improvement groups or companies. And there were long bouts of unemployment. The drug became the primary thing for me. It ran my life. And I did any and everything I could to get heroin in the end.
When you mentioned your daughter, you had this tone in your voice about her, a very loving tone. How did she interact with you around your addiction and now around your recovery?
Well, I have two sons, but one daughter. And she's daddy's girl. She was about 29 years old when she caused me to seek treatment. My daughter eventually became a lawyer herself. I don't care what I was doing during the course of my addiction. My daughter would find me. She went off to school for college and then eventually to law school, but she would find me. She would seek her daddy. On one evening, she surprised me and came to my apartment on the place I was staying, and I had just used. And we tried to have an intellectual conversation, and I went into a deep nod as a result of my using heroin. I came out of the nod when I heard her cry, "Daddy," and started crying. The one time before I heard my daughter use "daddy" in that tone was when she was 6 years old and had fallen out of a car. And I was not there at that time. And I came to the hospital, and as I was walking past her place in the hospital, she cried out my name in that same way. From the time period I heard that, I cried half the night. I couldn't wait to seek help that morning. And from that day since, I have not used drugs or wanted to touch drugs.
Dr. Gregory, when you hear this story, when you hear Michael's story about how family and his relationship with his daughter brought him back from the brink, do you think that that's a story that is the most of the time story as opposed to the rare story? How does family really play out most of the time?
Well, I think it's very characteristic of how family plays out. Matter of fact, go to the first part of the story when he talked about his addiction being to him, to some extent, a response to his domestic issues. Addictions are just a symptom of other issues that we're going through. Addictions are the way that we try to avoid pain and discomfort. Much of the pain or discomfort in our lives is a result of our interaction in our families and in our social groups. If you think about it personally, if you think about where your pain is right now, it probably has something to do with your relationships. So it's not feeling adequate, feeling unsuccessful, feeling some pain in those relationships sometimes that spark people going into drugs as a way to mask those feelings that they think are uncontrollable or overwhelming. And on the other end, the family is also part of the solution. Because when you can mend those relationships, when you can help people communicate and get proper boundaries, when you can help them to share resources and share common vision, then the healing can begin to occur and the family can provide the support that it really wants to and is trying to do all along.
Charlotte, please go ahead.
Michael. I was going to say this is so true. I thought one of the things that happened on my treatment process was addressing the issue of my feeling less than anything because of my irresponsibility as a father to both my daughter and to my son. Fortunately, one of the aspects of the treatment that I was given was dealing with my mental health and addressing how I felt so inadequate and trying to have me to realize the good person that was there. But also my family, which has always been a loving family. I have 11 siblings who have always loved me, always loved me. And during a time period of this recovery, expressed that even more. It's never been a family that was negative. It was me. Their love at times came through. And since recovery, I think they've been a healthy aspect of on this road for me.
Charlotte, you're a very successful professional, and we won't go into all of your history, but you're someone who's had a lot of success. And when you think about the price that you and your family had to pay to really try to deal with these issues, was it worth it to you?
Definitely worth it. Definitely worth it. The air between myself and my brother, and the air between that brother and our other brother, is much clearer. I learned a lot from the intervention. I learned a lot from Dr. Gregory. He talked so much about being able to own your feelings, do what you need to do, even if it seems hurtful, even if it seems standoffish, how to protect yourself and yet still love and care for the person who is going through the addiction. So I do think it's worth it. I don't know whether a full, complete communication of trust will ever be there, but at least a communication that seems loving is somewhat restored, so that's a good thing. And my brother seems to be very, very happy that he's not where he was before. So yes, it was successful. Like I said, my mother has passed on. I know before she died, she was very glad that, yes, he had finally at least broken that, that the road that he was on, he'd broken that track record. But I wish she would be around now to sort of see where he is now.
I have to end it there, but I really think all three of you have done so much to help us think through these issues. Thank you.
Yes, my pleasure.
Welcome. We were speaking with Charlotte, who participated in an intervention for her brother, led by Dr. Henry Gregory, who's director of the Rafiki Consortium. Also, Michael Middleton, a recovering heroin addict. All three joined us from the studios of WYPR in Baltimore, Maryland. And coming up, we have sports and your letters.